Hey, you. Yes, you guessed 10,542. Change your username. And while you're in a More Like Radio live page listening to fine quality programming, notice the banner ad just slightly above the chat room? It's a link to something you want in Amazon. Click it. It's probably reminding you to order something you need from Amazon.com. Don't leave MLR and type the URL like a sucker. Just click the link and it'll open in a new window. This way you can buy your shit and continue listening to the show. Now, change your username. It's right there on the right, stupid.
MoreLikeRadio.com, the new standard in internet radio.
By the way,
the Nerd Hour.
Best selling show.
Masters of None.
360 on 420.
Welcome to the Cut Print Film Podcast.
The Conti and Kenny Show.
OSW Review.
Antisocial Gamer Radio.
Alcohol by volume.
My time now.
It's time for Dutch and Royce. No! Get ready for Hippo Juice.
The Elvis and Albert Show.
The Cousin Joe Show.
It's High Society Radio.
Give it up for the deep
team. You're listening to Atomicast.
Hey, listeners. Yes, that means you. Missed your favorite More Like Radio shows live? No problem. Just go to morelikeradio.com/downloads. That's morelikeradio.com/downloads. More Like Radio's RSS feed works with your iThings, Zooms, Androids, Windows Phone, and anything else that can subscribe to an RSS feed. If you're so awesome that you only get your podcasts from iTunes, you can subscribe to our feed in iTunes by clicking the Subscribe to iTunes link right on the Downloads page. So what are you waiting for? Download More Like Radio podcasts and subscribe to our feed now. Yes, right now. Do it.
Obviously, I was... Oh, never mind. I'm not going to explain it. But...
No, explain radio to Ashley.
Are you sitting comfortably? Then I'll begin. Would you mind taking Colin for a walk about 8?
Just 2,000 hours. Oh, yeah.
Now here's your host. That's Ashley, and this is...
Antisocial Gamer Radio.
And good evening, ladies and gents. Welcome to a brand new episode of Antisocial Game Radio, live. Back to its usual time slot. Now the old clocks have changed over here. Coming to you live at 9 p.m. UK time, which is still Eastern, 4 p.m. Welcome to the show, ladies and gents. I have been doing various things. I have been playing various things other than Final Fantasy, which you'll be glad to hear, and I watched a documentary right before the show started, so I'll have something to talk about this week. I'll get into the usual pleasantries as I do. If you do want to call into the show, you can Skype us in Antisocial Game Radio. That's all one word on Skype. If you want to email the show, it's antisocialgameradio@yahoo.co.uk. If you want to join our Facebook group, it's facebook.com/group/MLRGamerLobby. Also, you can like the show's Facebook page. It's facebook.com/AntisocialGameRadio. Also, don't forget you can follow the show and the station. You follow us with the show with at MLR Gamer Radio, and you can follow the station at More Like Radio. Other stuff to get into, the usual stuff. About 4 weeks away from the MLR third annual live event coming Preservation Hall in downtown Lakeland, Florida, 25th of April. Tickets, seeing where that's happening, we'll find out soon when the tickets, if it's pay on door. Don't know just yet. Hoping to have some idea soon, but as soon as I know, I'll let you know. But yeah, it's going to be a great night. We've got Mersh and Dave and I think Dan DiMarino doing stand-up. There's raffles, giveaways, all sorts of stuff going on. And we are teaming up with the lovely ladies of Moxie La Femme, and they're going to be putting on a show for us, and we'll be putting on a show for everyone else. Basically, come down, it's a great night, and we're raising tons of money, hopefully, for charity, for the Big Cat Rescue, which is a non-profit cat sanctuary down in Tampa, also in Florida, like it is any other Tampa. But yeah, I say it's going to be great, and it's going to be a great night, and all of you should come if you're in the area. I mean, I'm flying across, as you usually do, you know. Got to add some culture to this fucking thing. I'm kidding. I say it's going to be a great night. Literally, if you can come, bring some money to donate and help us out. Help out Big Cat Sanctuary. I mean, I literally, you know, look on Facebook for Big Cat Sanctuary. They have some adorable tigers and lions and literally big cats. And I just want to cuddle them all and get myself ripped to pieces. But, it's you know, it's a great charity, and they need your support. You know, what can I say? Don't forget as well, supporting, you can support the station, if I can say it without stuttering. If you go to vapormania.com, they are one of our newest sponsors. Basically, anytime you order a thing of them, use the coupon code MLR, and basically you get 10% off your order. So basically, any of your vaping needs, e-cigarettes, that sort of stuff, just go there, buy stuff, use MLR, getting 10% off your order. So I'll go into what I've been playing. I'll start with the Final Fantasy stuff first, get that out of the way. Usual crafting, I'd say what I've been doing for the past couple of weeks, just trying to get my level up. Most of my stuff's at level 35. I've done basically just been doing leave quests, gathering, selling stuff. I mean, my bank balance has been fluctuating like you wouldn't believe. When it's been like buying stuff to fill the leaves, and I'll be glad when I've got it all capped out to 15. I'm just sort of, you know, done with that, and I can go back to my the fighting stuff. I say just doing leaves, gathering. I mean, I'm back to around 300,000 gil at the moment. We had a big update today. It was a 2.55 patch, which is probably, I think, like the last big patch before the expansion comes out in a couple of months. So that's. That's keeping everyone busy. I'm still nowhere near. I haven't even fought my second primal yet, so I've still got way to go. But I'm sort of doing my crafting. I'm selling a whole bunch of shit that I've got stored up in my inventory, trying to get rid of all the crap so I can make it more manageable, having high-quality gear knocking around, and get rid of all the low-quality normal stuff, just so it makes my gear that I make or use myself better. I mean, literally, I've been talking to loads of people about this game, and I've got a few people who want to play with me, so they're going to come to my server and play, and I'm going to craft a lot of gear. So anyone else wants to, you know, start playing Final Fantasy 14, you know, I'm on the Phoenix server, so drop us a message on email or emails on Facebook or whatever, you know, to contact me or the show. I say it often enough during the show. Basically, just, you know, drop us a line, I'll give you my character name. And, send in-game friend requests. You know, nice to get in-game friend requests from people who aren't fucking RMTers. If you need gear, I'll make you gear, because my crafting skill is getting quite high. It's roughly, 35. Pushing for 40 over the next week or so, but, it just takes time. But, just usual shit with Final Fantasy, crafting, selling, doing missions here and there. These basic bits and pieces. But I have been playing a lot of my 3DS because I've got no books to read, so I'm literally running out of books to read, so I'm actually just reverting to my 3DS. Sort of got my I played a bit of Pokemon, what the fuck version I've got? Omega Ruby, I think. I've just been basically putting my team in the battle box and putting the items on them so they're ready for the national tournament in about 2 months, because literally it's the last day of March, and yeah, pretty much 2 months away now from the national tournament. Maybe my last national tournament, because I'm sort of Pokemon'd out. I'm not that fussed about it anymore. I mean, if I can find someone at Nationals to buy my game off me for like 200 quid, I'm fucking laughing. The thousands of hours I spent on that bloody thing. So I've just been organising that, getting that sorted. I did play a bit of Steel Diver. That's quite good, actually. I downloaded like a demo of it. It's like a trial version. And yeah, it's really fun, because it's sort of two screens. Like, the bottom screen is your controls. It's like you can touch on the screen, or you can use the buttons. I found it easier to use the buttons because I've got big fingers, and sometimes it's hard to sort of touch, pick up stuff without breaking things. The buttons are easier for me to use. It's pretty much sort of me pushing up and down, moving the submarine certain places, picking up missiles, destroying other submarines, destroying like frigates and stuff. And yeah, it's very fun. And something I think about picking up. I mean, I'll have a look. It's probably on sale or something right now. But it's a fun game, and you know, I'm not sure. I'll have to look into it, what the review scores are like and what people are talking about. Because as I say, I did have a lot of fun with the few minutes I did play with it. And it is, a lot of fun because I'm sort of, looking for more stuff to play. I have been playing more Outrun and Afterburner, just doing bits and pieces, not spending too much time with it because it's sort of, it's basically, they're arcade ports. They're sort of, you put a quarter in or pound or whatever. Whatever currency or country you played Afterburner Outrun back in the 80s. And I just sort of, just enjoying it and having fun with it. What else? I haven't played too much of this either. I downloaded, because it was PlayStation Plus, I downloaded Abe's Odyssey, the new one that's new and tasty, I think that's what it is. Sort of updated HD version or whatever. I haven't played it yet. I've been meaning to. I had other stuff to play. I downloaded, was it Olly Olly 2, which I have no idea how the fuck that works. Because all the stuff is on screen, like you're a skateboarder and you've got to get from here to there and do tricks. And I'm like, I'm trying to, but you're just showing me stuff on the screen. You're not telling me how to press the button to do this because I'm sort of doing an Olly and then coming down and I'm not doing it properly. And it's like, well, what the fuck? And I'm like, oh, whatever. Who gives a shit? So I said, just stop playing that. But I did play a bit of Valiant Hearts, which I have been interested in a while. It's set during the World War One, and it's a sort of puzzle story type game. Done by Ubisoft, and it's very. It's odd. It reminds me of, I can't remember what the fucking game is called. I know I've talked about it, I've played it, completed it, and there was some game that I played where you played like a little Russian doll, and you had to sort of solve puzzles. It's like that. It's very fun. Even though it's this sort of dramatic telling of certain characters, like fictional characters during World War One, you got one guy, I'm playing now as a French guy, and there's some sort of German guy as well that you play as. I haven't got too far into it because I've been sort of messing around with other bits and pieces. It is very fun and the story is very somber. There's a voice, there's no actual sort of voice acting, but there is like a voiceover who sort of explains certain bits of the game, what's going on story-wise with the characters as you go through it, and you sort of solve a puzzle. I mean, now I'm really early on, just learnt the tutorials. Now I'm sort of trying to solve this puzzle at a train station to get some guys being picked on by these soldiers, so you've got to try and stop them, and I'm sort of all over the place on where I'm supposed to, what I'm supposed to do with it, and it's like pick up a bottle. It's very Monkey Island, the Curse of Monkey Island, that sort of stuff. It's sort of, to do this, to activate that. I mean, I had to throw a bottle at a bell and a whistle popped down. I have no idea how to actually use the whistle or if it's just an item. It's not really explained, but I'll look into it deeper when I get some time, but it's just sort of all over the place with it. But yeah, Valiant Hearts, it's on download now. I mean, because it's the last day of March today. We've got a whole bunch of new stuff coming on the PlayStation Plus. So I will be playing. There's other bits and pieces I've seen which interest me, so I'll give them a go. But yeah, the main thing I have been playing, and I've been playing a lot of, is Pokemon Shuffle, which I got. It's free on the 3DS, so download it. It's a free-to-play puzzle game. It's very, very much like the Pokemon Battle Troze. Yeah, that's it, Pokemon Battle Troze, where it's sort of the match three type game, very Candy Crush sort of thing. It's basically like the whole Candy Crush clone sort of thing, but with Pokemon. And it works because there's bonus features to it, because it's not just, as more levels you go through, there's different puzzles, as this item, with Candy Crush, you get some of the candies that are, get frozen in ice, or there's, turn into chocolate, that sort of stuff. Whereas this one's, they get frozen in ice, or some Pokemon turn to wood, and then others turn to steel, and sort of solving that. It's a bit tricky, but yeah, it's all lots and lots of fun. mean, I think I'm like six. There's only because I mean, there's only like 199 Pokemon to catch that I've had a look at from going through one of the menus, and it basically says, "Well, you've caught this Pokemon, you caught that Pokemon," and I just went right to the end to see, and it says like 199. So I'm okay. I mean, guessing through further updates, we might get all of the Pokemon, you know, all 721 at the moment. But, you know, I'm okay what we've got. I mean, they're adding a lot of the Mega Pokemon, which are basically your boss type Pokemon that you fight, which is interesting. But yeah, I say it is really good. And it's very addictive, but it's limited as well, because basically you start off with like lives. There's like five hearts that you get. And basically, every time you use one, you have to wait half an hour before it refills. So basically, you know, you can knock out five little levels and then have to wait, you know, half an hour for your next heart, or just basically leave it for like 2.5 hours until you get, you know, the full five back. But I mean, after each boss level, you do get jewels, which you can use to spend turning into currency or for extra lives or for extra moves, or basically it's sort of what you spend it. I mean, it's one of those, you know, it's a free to play game, so they do have the real money transaction stuff. You can buy more of these jewels and more of this coins, and but you know, use the coins to spend to get more moves, and or you know, you get a certain amount of coins you can buy, because basically you have to catch the Pokemon once you do a level. I mean, I've caught like 50, 55, something like that at the moment. But that's tricky as well, because, and it's weird, right? Because I'm playing for this game. Most of the levels I've done, I've got S rank on, which I'm sort of, you know, happy with. But yeah, I mean, there's like, you get it combines. Trying to find the way to figure this correctly. With your score that you get through playing the game, you can add it to the moves you have left, because every level is like, okay, you have to complete it in 15 moves or 16 moves or 20 or 30 moves. And basically, however many moves you have left, say you have like two, each move is worth 500 points, so you get like 1,000 points if you have two, and it just goes on and so forth and so forth. And then it sort of adds that to your complete score, and then your whole score is basically chucked onto a percentage bar with how much, you know, chances of you catching this Pokemon are. And it's a pain in the ass, because I'm wondering about certain things, because I'm playing it and it's like, well, okay, I've got like say 5,000, but the Pikachu's, it's only letting me from that score that I got for 5,000, it gives me, I don't know, 7% chance of catching it, and then it adds how many moves you had left as a bonus to it, so that will knock it up a little bit further, and then I'll end up with like, I don't know, 15% chance of catching this Pokemon, and then I'll throw the Pokeball, like a normal Pokeball, the red and white one, and okay, it won't catch it. But then it says, you have accumulated 2,500 coins. Spend them on a great Pokeball, and you can throw that, and it increases your chance by another 20, 30%. So it puts up to 50 or something, you know, whatever the math is. I'm not too fussed because it's just an example. But that's, you know, you can use real money on coins and stuff to spend on that. And yeah, it's fun. I mean, the thing is, we're catching the Pokemon. I mean, some of the ones that I've caught, that have had most of the ones I've caught have been high level percentages, 60, 70, 80, 90, you know, I maxed them out to 100%, and I've caught a Pokemon. But there's ones I did recently. I mean, I did like a Treecko, and I got like, I think it was 11 or 17%, something like that, and I caught it at that percentage, and I was like, well, what the fuck's going on here? I mean, I think it's trying to sort of push my way through the game, even though, as I say, there's 199 Pokemon. There's, I'm at level 65, I think it is. 60. I'm sort of just under halfway through the game anyway. Well, over a quarter of the way. But I mean, there's other little levels that you can do. There's what the fuck are they? Special levels and expert levels. Special levels are the ones, because there's a daily check-in feature, which is great because you get free coins every time you check in daily, as you'd expect. But yeah, there's special ones. I mean, there's three special ones at the moment. There's the daily challenge, which, as expected, is daily. But there's the chance now I've got to catch in a Rayquaza and a Keldeo, and they're limited to a certain number of days. I mean, my Keldeo one's got about 5-6 days left on it. My Rayquaza's got about 20. But they're so strong, these Pokemon. I mean, with the level Pokemon that you catch, you can level them up so they get stronger. But I don't know. I haven't figured out what benefit that does. I mean, if it, the points you get from what the fuck is it? The points you get from, you know, you say you match three EVs together and you get, say, 20 points. But if it's like a level ones, but if it's at level three or four, it makes it up to 50 points. I'm not sure if that's how it works. It probably does. But it's because there's literally, I've caught so many so far and trying to play through so many levels. It's one of those things, it's a game that's very simple, but you could spend hours and hours, days and days and months on this thing, trying to basically level up all your Pokemon so they get high enough level, and then you can end up, you know, do some of these missions and just get high score after high score, and then, you know, the percentage of catching the Pokemon is quite high. I mean, trying to do some of this stuff at the moment is a bit tricky and a bit of a pain in the arse, because it's literally me sort of, you know, rounds and again and again and again, just sort of doing basically the same catching Pokemon. But I mean, there's lines that I've caught which were hard the first time, but literally, as I said, like the Treecko, 11 or 17%, and I caught it, and it's like, well, what the fuck's going on here? This must be something wrong, or my Pokemon are really strong. But I mean, it does give you hints throughout the game. It says, okay, if you had this Pokemon, it would be so much better if you had that. Just how it goes. But yeah, it is a really fun game, and I am literally, I sort of wish I'd, you know, because I probably maxed out the five hearts before the show started, I wish I'd sort of took some time out, I know I'll do it during the break, and played a couple of levels and knocked out a couple more Pokemon. Because even when you don't catch the Pokemon, you can still, what the fuck is it? You can still play ahead. So basically, what recent one I didn't catch now was, was it Megalopunny? No. Fuck knows. But no, there was one Pokemon I didn't, there's several Pokemon that I haven't caught, but I've completed their stage and beaten them, but just not caught them. It does move you on, so it does keep progressing through further and further, but you can always go back and do more levels and get more coins to spend on bits and pieces. And, you know, it's very fun. I mean, I'm not putting real money into it because it's not worth it, because it's just a free, simple throwaway game, but it's a very fun puzzle game. And I am literally, it's really good. I'm sort of, you know, taking a couple of hours out to let all my hearts restore and then just basically blitzing through it. But yeah, it's really fun. And, you know, it is really fun. And I'd say it's free. So download it, pick it up, and have a play. It's really, really good. Yeah, I think that's really it. I haven't played too much. I am looking for stuff to play. I mean, my mate at work, he has told me about getting the Crew for my PlayStation, because literally he bought himself a PlayStation 4, and I'm trying to convince him to come play Final Fantasy 14 with me, having the thing of saying, yeah, I'll make all your gear and I have a whole load of money, so here you go. So that sort of should keep him nice and sweet for the moment. But yeah, he's saying about picking up the Crew. He says it's really good, the graphics good, and it's tons of fun. He says, because me and him, we're big fans of Need for Speed, like Need for Speed Most Wanted, not the recent Most Wanted, but the original Most Wanted, the good one. And basically, yeah, we're after some stuff to play, and, you know, he's got a whole bunch of games that I'm gonna punch him in the face and steal from him and play. But yeah, so we need stuff to play together, sort of co-op stuff. So the Crew's pretty good, so we'll make our own crew and go around, whatever. But yeah, he's saying that there's like, you know, 10,000 square miles, I think that's what he said, or square kilometers of land to go across. And he played like one night and literally barely made a dent. So, you know, I say he says it's like the Need for Speed that we wanted, where you can customize your cars and bits and pieces and do all that sort of stuff, and yeah, and really fun with it. So that's something I'm looking forward to picking up. And as well, next week we have Mortal Kombat coming out. I can't wait for that. I'm gonna go nuts when that comes out and just, you know, get my Sub-Zero on. But yeah, I love Mortal Kombat. It's a fucking awesome game. Yeah. So, you know, I can't wait for that. But yeah, I say there's other stuff I'm looking forward to, you know, just trying to find bits and pieces to play to, you know, as travel games. I've got, you know, Mario Kart and some other stuff, but looking for some sort of RPG kick, you know, as I've got me Final Fantasy on, I'm sort of, need something else, something sci-fi or darker, or I don't know. I'm not too sure. So, you know, email the show if you do know if anything I should pick up on the 3DS. I'm, you know, looking through the 3DS store at the moment. You know, it's surprising. I'm sort of, a week or so after getting paid, I still have money in the bank. So I can sort of spend money on stuff now. But yeah, I'm trying to find stuff to play and enjoy myself with. But it's just, you know, looking and looking at reviews. I mean, I did find something as well. It was adventure bar something. I don't know. It's some sort of bar RPG where you own a restaurant and then, you know. It sort of did okay, but wasn't overly good. But, you know, I'm sort of looking for bits and pieces to play at the moment, so that's what I'm doing. But yeah, I will go into what's basically I talked about at the beginning of the show. I watched a documentary right before the show started. It was about the Atari landfill, you know, with all the ET games. It's kind of good, but it was kind of bad. It was more good than bad, to be honest. I mean, the bad thing about the whole documentary is it didn't really need to be made because, we know that they found stuff in the desert. That's good. And, yeah, but that, you know... Yeah, we know he still found stuff there. That's fine. That's pretty much all we needed to know. But as I say, it did go into a lot. I mean, this is sort of... I mean, I could say it's sort of similar to what the video game The Movie was like when it talked about the whole history of video games and then it's talked about the crash in the 80s. This sort of fills in a lot of the basic gist of what happened, what was going on with Atari. Because basically, it does focus on the actual landfill in the... Almagordo Desert, and you know when they dug up all those ET games, but yeah, from what they say at the end, I mean they say it was like only the ET games were like 10% of what was actually filled in there. That was the Atari stuff. I mean there was like Defender, basically all the classic Atari stuff that was dumped into there was pretty much most of that. And you know, it's sort of the death of Atari they talk about in this documentary. It's really good as well. I mean, it's done by Zach Penn, who's, you know, wrote a lot of stuff, you know, game movie, you know, video game scripts, movies, stuff like that. You know, he's an accomplished screenwriter. But yeah, I say it was really good. I mean, it starts off talking about, you know, how the game was, what people's view on it. I mean, because the whole thing about the whole thing with this is that people's view on E.T., that, you know, for the Atari 2600, was that the game was so bad. Everyone's like, even if you haven't played it, everyone was saying it's the worst game ever, worst game, you know, big pile of shit. Which, you know, we can say without playing, but it wouldn't really, be justice. But, I mean, do it justice. Because they were saying that, well, there's other Atari games that they were not naming, like Firefly and something else. I can't remember what the hell it was called. But, yeah, that they were worse games than what the E.T. game was. But, yeah, it's saying, you know, it just sort of went into more about how Atari was started, about what it was like... with the actual, you know, Atari people themselves, which from what I watched from the documentary, they're a bunch of genius stoners, which you don't really get that much these days. Just, you know, stoner losers. But yeah, I say it was a very interesting documentary, and they, you know, so they went to the, you know, the desert where the landfill is in New Mexico. And they talked to several people, like one of the guys who sort of works there, and he says, yeah, I remember 20, 30 years ago, this is where it was. This, you know, he's been saying it all along, and then it was like trying to get permission to dig it all up, and it was going to the town's planning permissions, all the mayor, county, stuff, you know, all the, you know, dot the I's, cross the T's, that sort of people. But yeah, it was one of those things. It was really weird, because, I mean, I have watched the video game, the movie, and they talk about E.T., E.T. and Atari and the crash and what made computer games what they are. And this one pretty much covers most of that and then chucks in some bits and pieces that, as I said, it, you know, this documentary didn't need to be made, but it was, and it's enjoyable. And, you know, it does fill in sort of my gaming knowledge and, you know, it adds some stuff to what we've known. I've always known that not where they've been buried, obviously, but I've always figured as much as if this game was so bad, what the hell would you do with it, apart from bury it? I mean, everything gets buried these days. You know, it's what I do for a living, basically. But they talk about how Atari and all the good points that it had, and the fact that we probably wouldn't be where we are with, you know, computer technology and phones, because there's a whole montage sequence where they were showing, like, you know, sort of Atari, a very young Bill Gates. The Apple computers, and then there's like Steve Jobs with the iPhone, and you know, all this sort of stuff. And it was like, well, without Atari and what they did for the gaming industry and technology and computers, we wouldn't be where we are today. I mean, say it's escalation on basically what we have, and you know, it was a very interesting documentary. But there was various points about it that did make me laugh. The fact that with the E.T. game, Steven Spielberg actually played it and approved it because the guy, Howard, oh, I can't remember his last name, but yeah, the guy who made it, because it's safe. He did make it in 5 weeks because he was on a deadline because they wanted to get it out by Christmas, and that's why it wasn't as good as it was, because everyone found it so hard, and it wasn't, it, you know, it was a rushed game. I mean, he sort of, you know, puts his hands up and says, well, yeah, it's, you know, they gave me 5 weeks to make this, so I said I could. And, you know, his estimation of what he wanted to do with the game was like 3D modelling, and it was like, yeah, just, it wouldn't work. I say, people had so high expectations for these games, but the technology isn't where... Then this makes me wonder, because as I say, the technology wasn't where it was supposed to be. It isn't was what the fuck am I trying to say? It wasn't what it is now. It's, you know, what he wanted to do, his mindset of what he wanted to do in a game couldn't be done yet. Which actually makes me wonder now if we're in the same sort of stage. It's like, well, we know what we want to do with games. With, I say, as we're moving forward to VR, augmented reality. Are we at that space in time where it's like, well, we want these, as I say, I mean, I can bring in Sword Art Online animes, the full body immersion into the game. We're nowhere near that yet, but, you know, could we 20, 30 years down the line be involved in that sort of thing? Will that actually happen? Maybe, maybe not, we don't know. As I say, technology is not that advanced yet, but you go back 20, 30 years, to the early 80s, and that was like that. But yeah, I mean, this documentary is actually really good, and it's worth a watch for anyone to watch it. You know, who wants to watch it. I say, watch Video Game the Movie the first, and then watch this one. I mean, it's a very short documentary. It's only like an hour long, so there's literally, you know, get the dinner on the go, watch this, do the ironing while watching it, I mean, I do need to sort of watch Video Game the Movie again and sort of give that another look. But yeah, I was saying about the game, E.T., Steven Spielberg himself signed on this because Howard said, well, okay, I want, before we make it go and gold and, you know, to put it out the door, I want Steven Spielberg to play it and approve it. And Steven Spielberg himself actually approved this game and, you know, say shows what he knows about computer games, but he actually approved the game because there's video footage of him saying that everyone liked the game. And then, you know, there's some weeks later, this Howard guy, he's sort of walking through Atari and everyone's saying it's not his fault or whatever, and he has no clue what's going on because no one's told him. It's like, well, this game's been panned and pushed back and people are, you know, bringing it back to the stores, you know. And say, it, you know, it's quite funny because, I mean, this guy has nothing to do with computer games now. He's like a psychiatrist. But yeah, it's just one of those things. It shows, you know, how people were back in the day about this sort of game, and not just this game in general, but whole of Atari and computer gaming. It's just one of those things. It just sort of makes me feel really bad for what happened. It's like, how, I don't know. It's weird to explain, but I mean, it, you know, sort of looking back on what he could have done to make it better. I mean, if he'd probably said no, and that's the thing. They were sort of biting the hand, not in a bad way, but biting the hand that feeds them. It was like, well, can you do this? This will make us tons of money. Because literally, I mean, fucking the Atari, they were printing money. I mean, there was a news reporter in one of the clips, and it's saying that they'd lost like $500 million. And I'm like, holy fucking shit. And this is in the 80s. That's a fucking lot of money. But yeah, I say it is a really good documentary and it's worth a watch. But yeah, I say it does make me feel bad for what happened to Atari. I mean, they're pretty much non-existent. Now, they're, you know, I mean, I said last week they got a fitness app out, which, eh. I mean, it lets you play the new games and stuff, but... But not new games, sorry, the old games again. But people have other stuff to play on their phones, and, you know, it's a different time, and technology's moved on, and yeah, it's weird. I mean, it's sort of looking at how these games work, and they look bad now compared to, you know, what we're playing now. I mean, fucking, look at Final Fantasy, I'm walking through various different worlds and regions, and the game looks amazing, whereas you look at Pong, and Yars' Revenge, and Centipede, and Missile Command, and it's like, yeah, this is just, you know, dots on a screen. But that's what they were capable of making back then. And, you know, I don't know. Time moves on. So does technology. And, you know. But, yeah, I say, there's, I mean, there's nothing to talk about as much on this because it's literally sit down and watch it yourself. It's a very entertaining documentary. It's very interesting as well. And I've learned a bunch of things. But, yeah, I say, sort of documentary does come at both angles, because to be honest, I would say it's only like an hour long and it does feature both stuff, which is all filler, because basically, I mean, the whole lifelong question since the E.T. came out was like, okay, E.T., yeah, great, what happened to all the games that were basically sent back? And it's like, well, they buried it, and it's like, okay, yep, they found it, that's good. But then they sort of filled it in with more stuff about the birth of Atari, the gaming, how much money was made, that sort of stuff, all the facts, details. And then when it came to part of the documentary of the show about Landfill, they actually got Ernie something or other, who's doing Ready Player One, the novel. He turned up in his DeLorean, and it was like there was a picture of like George R. Martin, footage of George R. Martin in his car, and he better hurry up and finish those fucking Game of Thrones book, because that old man looks like he's about to die. But yeah, it's just stuff going on about like various people involved in, like, you know, they got the guy who created E.T. back at the landfill, and then it's like the guy who sort of was working at the landfill, they got him. And yeah, it's basically a big sort of show and dance, song and dance about all this sort of stuff that was going on. And, you know, it is very interesting and very entertaining. And say, literally, it's a very quick documentary, being, you know, only an hour long. Just give it a watch, and it's very entertaining. And I say, it's good. It's interesting as well. You learn a lot. But yeah, if you are going to watch this, watch the video game, the movie first, because then it does pick out some of the points. But this documentary does highlight some of the bits of the crash of Atari and, you know, what happened. But yeah, it's a very good documentary and worth a watch. I will go into some new stuff now, because pretty much that was all I really needed to talk about, to be honest. It was really good, you know. Yeah, let's do some Nintendo stuff, as I'm sort of been playing a lot of Nintendo stuff recently. Legends of Zelda Wii U delayed until 2016. Yeah, it's a bit sad on this one. So maybe I can hold off now buying my Wii U until next year. But yeah, so I'll go with this from Eurogamer. The highly anticipated Wii U Zelda game won't be out until next year, series producer Eiji Onuma revealed today in a development update video. Nintendo also noted on Twitter that the game won't be shown off at this year's E3 in June. This may come as a surprise to some, as Onuma just said in December that the upcoming Zelda was on track for 2015. So what's the hold up? It turns out Onuma and company have been discovering all new gameplay possibilities as they've been designing the first fully open world Zelda adventure game. Scroll down. Yeah, in the last 3 months, as the team has experienced firsthand a freedom of exploration that hasn't existed in any Zelda game to date. I was thinking now, Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask, they were open world games. I mean, where else do you expect to go to in a Zelda game? I mean, there was temples, there was a farm, you could go fishing. There was a town you could go in Hyrule, you know, Hyrule Castle. There was the mountains where I wouldn't really say it's an open world. I mean, aren't all RPGs open world games anyway? I mean, or do you need like two towns to visit? Or because, you know, Ocarina of Time only had one, so did Majora's Mask, I believe. I didn't get that far. I don't know. Let's carry on reading. But yeah, in the last 3 months, as the team has experienced firsthand, as we have worked to turn these possibilities into reality, new ideas have continued to spring forth. It now feels like we have the potential to create something that exceeds even my own expectations. That's cool. I mean, I believe that. I do honestly, genuinely believe that. As discovering, you know, new possibilities, what you can do in a game, make it even better. take your time. There's no rush. I mean, trust the Wii U's been out for a couple of years now. You know, take some time with it. There's no rush. I mean, there's plenty of other stuff that's available to play on the Wii U. I mean, Monster Hunter, that keeps people playing for fucking ages. And as I say, the Nintendo console stuff isn't selling that well anyway, so there's no point in a rush to make this. Well, to be honest, for shareholders and stockholders, it's like, yeah, well, we need to make the money on the big stuff, whereas we have Pokemon and Mario making tons of money on the small stuff on the 3DSs. But yes, we are no longer making our 2015 release our number one priority. Instead, our priority is to make the most complete and ultimate Zelda game, he added. I hope to use the added time to make Legend of Zelda for the Wii U into a game that will reward you for your patience. But yeah, this makes me wonder, right? Because we have the Nintendo, was it the NX? The new Nintendo device, which I think is a console. I haven't looked at it too much. I know I should have looked into this the actual device, but I haven't. I've been busy doing other bits and pieces. But it would make me laugh if this became... Well, if this became a next-gen title, because it's not coming out this year. They say it's delayed until 2016. I mean, I think they're going to do the whole Twilight Princess thing on this, where the Twilight Princess came out on the GameCube and then was ported over to the Wii, so you could play it there. And I could see them doing something like this with this one. The better version is probably on the Wii, on the NX than the Wii U, but I don't know. But I mean, it's a bit of a pain in the ass that everyone's been waiting this game. It looks amazing from what we've been shown. You know, it's just, I don't know, one of those things. Here we go, yeah. More Wii U controller, designed to train surgeons. Yeah, a Wii U eShop developer plans to release what may be the most bizarre Wii remote peripheral yet. The Wii U... here we go. Laparoscopic controller, there we go, is a specially designed peripheral that holds two Wii remotes and two nunchucks. Grendel Games developed the device to work with its adventure puzzle game Underground, using technology inherited as a way of training doctors in laparoscopy, otherwise known as keyhole surgery. Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, I've always heard about something. They want some sort of program to do keyhole surgery with as a practice. The studio also designed the educational virtual EndoSuite software, which actually lets you practice surgery, surgical scenarios. It's just nothing like Surgeon Simulator. No, I would hope not. Less gaffer tape. Underground replicates the movements used when operating on a patient with two mechanical arms on either side of a screen that allows players to interact with the environment. In the game, you play as Swank, a robot butler who has to gather resources, then construct a safe path through hazardous areas for his own owner to follow. In doing so, Grendel has said that players are also being subconsciously trained in skills that need to be operate via keyhole surgery. You're just doing it in a safe environment and not armed with anything that could slice open someone's spleen. Yeah, basically. But that's cool, though. I mean, all this controller stuff. See, it's quite funny. They want to do all free, hands-free controllers, like the Kinect and stuff like this, but you've got a Wii U controller, which is helping train surgeons and doctors. That's great. But, I mean, here we go, yeah. It's going to cost £180 plus £11. Was that £11? Yeah, £11 for shipping. That's not bad. But yes, yeah, something good coming out of, you know, something bad, which is the Wii U. Even though I want one, which is bizarre. Let's find some more Nintendo stuff. Here we go, yeah. Pokemon Rumble World revealed via ratings board listing. A recent ratings board listing has outed Pokemon Rumble World as yet an unannounced title for bound for either 3DS or Wii U. I'm just trying to I think I wonder if this is coming out for the Wii U. I'm not sure. Maybe I don't know. I'll read the articles. I'm not even reading the article, but I'm talking. Nintendo has so far made no mention of the game, which popped up last week on Australians' rating boards. The game may be one of the reveals due in next Nintendo Direct broadcast, which has been scheduled to take place at 11 PM UK time on the 1st of April, which is tomorrow. I mean, I'll have an update for this for next week. Once we get the Nintendo Direct, so I'll have a watch of that tomorrow. Either way, we'll be reporting the major news as it happens. Basically, I say it's not April Fool's joke. Pokemon Rumble U. I'm reading two things at once. Rumble World looks to be a game developed by Umbrella, the second party studio responsible for the original WiiWare Pokemon Rumble plus 3DS and Wii U sequels Rumble Blast and Rumble U. The spin-off series centres around clockwork toy versions of the Pokemon critters, which can be made to fight each other. Pokemon Rumble U introduced NFC figurine support to the series, a precursor to Nintendo's main Amiibo line. Perhaps a new sequel will work with a fresh range of Amiibo toys. More than likely. I mean, we can guarantee it. Pretty much this new... Pokemon Rumble Worlds, it has to have some sort of Amiibo integration because Nintendo's pushing Amiibos like you wouldn't believe, and maybe you would. But yeah, I say they're really just pushing this Amiibo shit out the door, and it's annoying the fuck out of me. It really is. Sort of focus on, focus on something that people want to play and people want to do than fucking Amiibos. Jesus Christ. Where are we? Here we go. Yeah, here we go. Yeah. Ubisoft's cancelled Zombie U2 would have featured co-op. Co-op play would have been included in Ubisoft's now cancelled Zombie U sequel. New report states between 5 to 10 staff at Ubisoft Montpellier worked on a Zombie U2 prototype back in 2013, but the project was canned before it ever passed the pre-production stage. Details uncovered by Unseen 64 via Nintendo Everything shows that the series would have returned to a rundown zombie apocalypse setting, now with the possibility of a second player by your side. Which sounds interesting, the first player would hold the gamepad as in the original Zombie U, while a second player uses a pro controller. Ubisoft was planning to feature levels with multiple routes to force players into splitting up at certain points. It's not the first time we've heard about a Zombie U 2. Ubisoft Montpellier creator director Jean-Philippe Caro briefly mentioned a prototype for the sequel back in May of 2013. Thank you for the interest in Zombie U, Caro wrote on Twitter. The team is working hard on a prototype. It's too soon to tell you more. But the project was canned shortly after that. Just 2 months later, Ubisoft CEO Yves Guillemot said the Wii U exclusive original was not even close to turning a profit, and there were no plans to ever desire for a sequel. Yeah, so basically, there could have been, but they won't, and now we'll never get one. I mean, I heard mixed things about Zombie U. Some people said it was good, most people said it was bad, but it's one of those things, you can't really know until you play it. Alright, let's move on, let's find some more stuff to talk about. Righty. Okie dokie, where are we? Let's look for some... here we go, yeah, let's do some Sony stuff. As I've got a few minutes left before I have to go to break, but yeah, we'll go for some Sony stuff. There we go. God of War 3 Remastered announced for the PlayStation 4. Sony has announced God of War 3 Remastered for PlayStation 4. It launches on 17th of July this year in the UK. The game outputs at 1080p resolution, and its developers are targeting 60 frames per second. Sony has said in a note that just sent to press, Sony Santa Monica's gory action adventure launched on the PlayStation 3 in March of 2010. God of War 3 Remastered marks the series star Kratos' debut on the PlayStation 4 and celebrates 10 years of God of War. I mean, you know, my mate's got a load of God of War games that he said I could play, but as he's got, I've got no PlayStation 3 anymore, they're not going to get played. We toast another 10 years. There will be I'm just reading ahead. In a post on the PlayStation blog, Sony Monsanto Monica's Corey Barlog suggested that there may be more to come from the God of War beyond God of War 3 Remastered. Should we toast to another 10 years, he asked. Will there be another 10 years? Question mark. Possibly. We don't know. I mean, how many more gods has he got to fight? How many has he killed? You know, that's just... I don't know. It's one of those things. Could it... It worries me, right? Because I mean, well, Metal Gear Solid is dead, pretty much. We've got Metal Gear Solid 5, coming out whenever the hell that decides to finally come out. September, I think it was, yeah. But it's like, well, do we need more God of War games? And basically, will we get more God of War games that are pretty much rinse and repeat of the same shit we've already done? You know, you can only spin out, you only got to look at Assassin's Creed. You can only spin out so much, so quickly, so often. But I don't know. I mean, so God of War 3, I want to play it, but I've never played any others, so it's a pretty bit too much late in the day to get on with it. And the fact that, God of War 3 only came out like 5 years ago, I don't know. If I play it, I play it. If I don't, I don't. I don't know. I'm sort of up in the air. PlayStation Network, the Europe service status indicators coming soon. Sony Computer Entertainment America recently launched a PlayStation Network service status indicator in which it tells you which services are up and running. At the time of the publication, everything from account management to gaming and social, from PlayStation Now to PlayStation Store, has a little green tick against it. It's just the whole status information. I mean, I had to sort of look up today how long I'd have my PlayStation Plus for, and I've still got like 2 months ahead of me, two months to go, so it doesn't run out till like halfway through May, so I'm good. But it's sort of, I don't know. I mean, we should all have easy access to basic information about how the console works, what it's storing, the data, that sort of stuff. But sometimes we don't, or we don't know where it goes. I mean, I had to look up stuff, but I don't know. But this is good. It's more PlayStation stuff being, helpful, I guess, to the layman's terms when it comes to this sort of stuff. Because, I mean, I didn't fucking know what I was looking for my PlayStation Plus subscription, but I Googled it and found out that was good. Sony cuts PlayStation TV UK price to £45. Basically, Sony has cut the price of UK PlayStation TV in UK to £44.99. Device launched in Europe in November 2014, priced $84.99. PlayStation TV lets you stream your PlayStation 4 games to another HD TV in your home, as well as play PS Vita, PSP, and PS1 classics on the TV. If you own a PlayStation 4, you can use Remote Play to stream PlayStation 4 games from your console to PlayStation TV over your home network. So if you're if your living room TV is occupied, you can use PlayStation 4 Remote Play to play PlayStation 4 games on another HD TV. The price cut is welcome, given that many considered PlayStation TV too expensive when it launched. Digital Foundry's reviews labelled it as overpriced and overspec'd. Yeah, for what it does, basically, it's sort of an answering machine, but for TV programs. Without strong support in services, what we're left with is essentially a Vita without screen, but that's what kills PlayStation TV's chances of success in the inflated price points, Digital Foundry chief Robert Ledbetter wrote. It costs £85 for just the micro console. HDMI cable adapter and a redeem code for Oli Oli, which is free to play at the moment. The original one. Velocity Ultra and Worms Evolution Extreme. You aren't even supplied with a controller, but you need to supply your own DualShock 3 or 4, otherwise you're left with a completely inoperable device. Here's Sony's statement. They say, starting from the 27th of March, PlayStation TV will offer even greater value for money when it becomes available for only $44.99. Now, with an even more accessible price, you can benefit from the advanced features and technology that PlayStation TV brings to your home entertainment experience. By bringing new innovation into the home, you can have the freedom to play whenever and in whichever room you wish. PlayStation TV has never been more accessible, and there has truly never been a better time to expand your PlayStation experience. That sounds all nice and floaty, but yeah, you have to wait and see. I mean, just PlayStation TV sort of went under my radar, but it's there's no real need for it to be on any of my radar trying to find stuff, because I don't know, I'd say this website's out there. You can go and find whatever you want on that. But, I mean, the whole streaming stuff does actually seem pretty cool, but I don't know. It's just, I mean, because I live on my own anyway, so there's never anyone watching TV when I get here. It's literally me turning on TV, playing some Final Fantasy, or playing, I will be playing Abe's Odyssey. But, you know, all the other stuff and bits and pieces that I can be playing. But I don't know. All right, let's find something else to talk about before I go to break. There we go. No, I can't do that. Yeah, let's talk about... Here we go, yeah, Homefront. Now, I'm looking forward to this, sort of. This could be a good game. It might be. I mean, I sort of enjoyed the first one with the multiplayer. But so this game's been delayed until 2016 now. Post-apocalyptic open-world shooter Homefront: The Revolution has been delayed until 2016, publisher Deep Silver has announced. Last we heard, the game was set for a vague 2015 launch, but this was before developer Crytek UK was closed down and then bought by Deep Silver, which relaunched it as a Deep Silver Downbuster Studios. There we go. If I could try and say this without messing up, it would be great. Yeah, Deep Silver's acquisition of the studio Insight included the rights to the Homefront franchise, as well as work on the Revolution. The Revolution created to date. Okay. We are excited that Deep Silver's acquisition of the Homefront IP and assets from Crytek has allowed development of Homefront: The Revolution to continue with minimum disruption. Deep Silver, Dambuster, Hope Boss. Has it Zala? Sounds like a Bond villain. The team here believes we are working on something truly special. Dambuster Studios are extremely talented group of people, added Deep Silver's boss, Dr. Clemens Kondaritz. We are giving a team every opportunity to turn Homefront: The Revolution into a best-selling title, and have set a 2016 release date to provide them the time they need to achieve this. You can expect to hear more about this later in this year. The original Homefront received mixed reviews upon its release for PlayStation PC, PlayStation 3, Xbox 360. Its sequel was originally set to be published by THQ before it collapsed. That's pretty much in the article. Yeah, I'm looking forward to playing this and where they're going with the story and the characters. Because it pretty much the original one was pretty much the whole story of Red Dawn, but you know, minus kids really. And Patrick Swayze. But yeah, I say this could be interesting. I'm looking to sort of see where it goes, but I don't know. I mean, I want it to be good. I really do. I mean, because the best thing I did like about original Homefront was the multiplayer. The story was okay, the stuff you could do. I mean, you had to there's one bit where you had to hide under bodies in a baseball field, and it was like, wow, this is really sick and twisted shit. But yeah, I say it was a fun game of what you could do and how the story was. I mean, it wasn't the greatest thing in the world, but it was good for what it was, really. But yeah, I was like, delayed until 2016. work on it some more, make it nice and pretty and fun and enjoyable, but I don't know. It could be a good, hopefully. I'm going to take a break now because I need a break. I need a drink. So come back in about 10, 15 minutes and I will have some more news for you right after these messages.
And Ashley, you're from England, so we're not really sure what asshole number you would be. We just know it would be at least two extra numbers and one extra dash.
Yeah,
that's all we know for sure. Yeah. It's some sort of country code.
Ladies and gentlemen, we invite you to have a go.
If you'd like to Skype in, it's Antisocial Gamer Radio. All one word.
MoreLikeRadio.com, the new standard in internet radio.
Now I'm realizing that this is all going to be on fucking podcast. Oh, boy.
I told you. Yeah, I was trying to warn you the whole time.
Dude, I don't care. I'm voluntarily Skyping into you. Use this to make a promo. I don't care. No. Mm-hmm. Dude, like I said, my fiance doesn't listen. Dutch got drunk one night. Well, he gets drunk every night. But he got drunk one night, and I used it as a promo. Why not? Use this into a promo. I give everyone permission to turn this audio into a promo. I don't care.
He also used Drunk Me for a promo, too, if you remember.
Punch AJ, you play it every week.
I do. Folks at home, Radio Gold like this happens every Sunday and Thursday at midnight on 360 on 420, only on MoreLikeRadio.com.
The Elvis and Alfred Show, Thursdays, MoreLikeRadio.com, 5 to 7. I'm Elvis Cage.
I'm Alfred.
I'm Jameson, and on the phone...
It's Bill. I'm phoning it in.
Oh, he's phoning it in. Coming to you live from the Halfpenny Pub in Sayville.
That's right. Punk rock music.
Independent music.
And all the rest of the things that we speak about.
Crazy party stuff.
Yeah. Here on MoreLikeRadio.com.
And ElvisandAlfred.com, 24-7.
Yarr!
The Elvis and Alfred Show.
Now deep beats, cause the V is so deep. An interesting show, it won't ever put you to sleep. It has all the content that you want, the best show on the planet. I ain't even gonna front. Deep beats, bringing it again and again. Don't ever miss a show and make sure that you're always tuned in. Hosted by my man Mike and Ski Ray. Keep it turned up on the mic all day. Ask me what's my favorite podcast, I say Deep Beats. Listen to the show while you're sipping on your tea. It's the hottest of the hot. You ain't gotta trust me. Tune into the show and you will definitely see. With Mike and Ski Ray, you can't go wrong. The biggest show ever, bigger than a King Kong. Listen up and don't ever, ever miss a beat. It's Deep V. Remember that the V is so deep.
What's up, everybody? Deep V Podcast.
Deep V.
Be sure to listen to us Fridays at 8 Eastern on MoreLikeRadio.com.
Yep.
Also download us on iTunes.
Just type in Deep V.
Deep V, your favorite podcast. Favorite podcast.
If you're sick and tired of getting pro wrestling only after it's gone through the PG filter, then it's time you were introduced to Combat Zone Wrestling. Celebrating 15 years of ultra violence, Combat Zone Wrestling will give you all the high stakes, high flying, and hard hitting pro wrestling you can handle. Check out their live event schedule, get information on their next iPay-per-view, skim the roster, or shop for CZW merch right now at czwrestling.com. That's czwrestling.com. No dance segments, no endless talk of downloading apps, just wrestling. Combat Zone Wrestling, the ultra violent underground.
You know, at the start of the last episode, we went through different nationalities, you know, and now people know that we're Irish.
And now people know that we're all shite at accents as well.
But I was wondering, is it prejudice to not make fun of, like, all of the countries?
Where are you going for here?
We'll name check every country on the show, that way no one can be mad about that.
I could do Swedish.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Birdie, birdie.
After the Italians.
Papa da poopy.
Papa da poopy.
Okay. To the Mexicans.
Hey, man.
Spain. Singapore.
Oh.
amazing.
Australians?
Crocodile Dundalk.
No.
A big loop are you?
No, that sounds like Limerick or something.
That's right, we never slag off the Irish, do we? Someone put a bomb in me potato. There you go. OSW review. All Irish, all racist.
More like radio, less like crap.
Oh, hello there. I didn't see you come in. This is Mitch, producer of Dutch and Royce. I just wanted to take a quick moment to remind you why we are better than you.
I took the turkey baster and put it in the glass and sucked up as much pee as I could. I took the turkey baster, after lubricating it in my asshole, and put it up as far as I could in my asshole, and I was repeatedly thrusting it in and out while jacking off and screaming out a boy's name and moaning to make it feel like it was real.
I can't believe
this. I then imagined
Sean, did you
my
write this?
I then imagined in my head him screaming, "I'm coming!" And I squeezed the turkey baster ball, shooting all my pee into my ass. I kept taking the turkey baster out and filling it with more pee and shooting it deep into my asshole, making it feel like it was a huge cum.
Listen to Dutch and Royce live Tuesdays from 10 to midnight, only on morelikeradio.com.
What kind of store only has one thing on the shelf? T-Fury does. Now before you complain, listen to how it works. Each day a brand new t-shirt design becomes available for only 24 hours, then it's replaced by a new design the following day. They're all submitted by freelance artists too, so they're completely unique. They come in multiple colors and sizes, and they're all inspired by nerd and geek culture. And for only $11 per shirt, you can't go wrong. Check out today's limited edition design right now at tinyurl.com/MLRTs. Bookmark it and check back daily for new designs at tinyurl.com/MLRTEES.
If you weren't able to catch the last Hippo Juice show, here's what you probably missed.
I just keep thinking to myself, and it makes me giggle, that every time I hear the story, I imagine it was Ray Romano in the same situation.
Oh.
Oh, never. Oh,
kind of does.
I barely touched her. Come on. Oh. Oh, it was my brother. Look at him. He's bigger than me. Come on. Oh, come on, everybody loves me. I got twins. Come on. Oh, let's go Home Depot. Come on.
Fess up, Raymond. You know it was you. They got you on video.
Anybody want soup?
Ma, come on. We're talking over here.
Oh, man. I'm dying.
So if you learn anything from Hippo Juice, remember, Ray Romano allegedly punched his wife in an elevator.
Right.
We don't report the news accurately. We report half of it. Whatever. It's still news, so fuck you guys. This is more entertaining than some football player.
Listen to the Hippo Juice show live every Wednesday night, 7 to 9 p.m. on morelikeradio.com.
The Conti and Kenny Show.
Well, that's where they started, yeah. But a priest biting another priest's ear off?
Colorado Dickhead said, did you see the dude in Texas who beat the minister to death with an electric guitar? You hear about that?
An electric? What, do they don't have? What, do they have a slide guitar down there? They don't have electric guitars down there?
It was Monsignor Hendrix who did it. I just made that up. Thanks, Colorado Dickhead.
Father Clapton. Goes ape shit.
Brother Becht.
Friar Ray Vaughan goes ape shit in church, and that is a big news.
Rabbi Little Richards.
No, we'll go with Keith Richards.
Father Van Halen. Yeah, very nice. Yeah, Eddie Van Halo.
The Conti and Kenny Show. Monday nights,
7 to 10 on morelikeradio.com.
Listen to More Like Radio every Tuesday night for the answer to this question that's on everybody's lips.
What does the trunk say?
On your fuck. Oof. Ah!
What the trunk say?
I'm not one that judges penises.
Blah, 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 blah.
I can't understand what
What does the trunk say?
Do it in a bourbon barrel. I am all over the goddamn place, okay. Oh, let me, excuse me,
What the trunk say?
I will fucking do that. I think that's enough of the racism there. Okay.
What does the trunk say?
Alcohol by Volume, Tuesdays 6 to 8 p.m. only on morelikeradio.com.
High Society Radio is now part of morelikeradio.com.
Who's all part of the More Like Radio cavalcade of stars? Oh, who are you joining there?
Oh, well, Hippo Juice, they're the soul behind More Like Radio. And we're jumping on there. High Society Radio, that is.
What other kind of shows are over there, though?
Oh, there's plenty. There's just a roster that's ridiculous. There's 360 on 420. Mm-hmm. There's a gentleman show. There's Ain't Social Gamer Radio. There's the Red Show. There's Daytime Divas.
Okay, so you're not out there by yourself in the cold anymore.
No.
You're fucking with...
a family.
Yeah, a real family. A family of gangsters.
Take the edge off. MoreLikeRadio.com. It's like rap music you can understand.
Damn, it feels good to be a gangster.
Tonight at 10, it's a tale of lust, seduction, and murder on Sexy Betrayals. Then at 7, some like their murder with a side of sexy biscuits on Southern Fried Homicide. But now, get ready for Lust, Betrayal, and Murder on Hot Load Case Files.
Oh, yeah. Three of the best shows in a row.
Is the lube over there?
Yeah, I got lube right here.
Well, get over here, big guy.
Yeah. What the hell? Yeah, hi. We aren't getting our informative murder porn. No, none of our channels that have informative murder porn appear to be working. Yeah, the screen just says, how do you tame a horse in Minecraft? Yes, we do have children. A what? A parental lock? Stan! How do you tame a horse in Minecraft?
What?
What is Minecraft and how do you tame a horse in it?
You guys don't need to be watching that stuff.
Oh, come on! You can't block your parents from watching informative murder porn! What, you think if we watch shows about married people killing each other all the time, we're gonna go out and do it? That's stupid! I'm not going to go out and kill your mom just because I watch Investigative Discovery, Stan. It'd be impossible to clear away all the DNA evidence anyway. Even if I hired someone else to kill her, I'd have to kill that person too because 96% of the time that person eventually tells the truth. I've thought this through a lot. Stan, you're a lousy kid. I wish Jaden Smith was my son.
And welcome back to part two of Antisocial Game Radio, live on morelikeradio.com. Yeah, I have a couple of articles here about The Witcher 3. Now, this game, everyone says it's really good, but I never played the first one because it was on PC. I had the second one, I rented it, and I played it for about, I think, 10 minutes. And I'm like, well, I'll put this down to one side, and I'll play something else now to finish this off, and I never went back to it. And now we have The Witcher 3 coming out, and I'll probably never play this, but all I've been hearing about this is good stuff. I mean, they're saying there's this article here I've got from Eurogamer. It's like The Witcher 3 could take over 200 hours to complete. That's if you do all the side quests. The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt, make sure I say that properly, could take the completion of over 200 hours to wrap up, according to the senior game designer Damien Monnier. When asked about the game's length on Twitter, Monnier replied, hard to say. If you do everything, I'd say over 200 hours. Previously, the game had been estimated roughly between roughly half that, with a 50-hour main quest and 50 hours of side quests.
I scrolled down this bloody page. Yeah, it says, guess that gives plenty of time to grow Geralt's beard, which is the next article that I have, upon Witcher 3's release on the 19th of May. So basically, I mean, it's coming out very soon, and, you know, everyone's looking forward to it, I guess. But yeah, say about the beard. German magazine GameStar recently published an article about an upcoming fantasy role-playing game with The Witcher 3. And it revealed a raft of new information. Help for a NeoGAF user, His Majesty, translated the article into English for our reading pleasure. In among notes about the four difficulty levels, the size of cities, and more action-adventure-style sequences, we spotted the following. Yes, here we go, yeah. Geralt's beard will grow over time. Piqued our interest. We knew developer CD Projekt had planned a huge number of features in the game, but we hadn't heard of this morsel before. What Geralt's beard growing all about then? Well, we asked CG Projekt's communications chief, Mikhail Placo Gelski, for more detail. Here's what he's told us. The beard grows as time passes when Geralt moves between locations. The beard has several states, and these states determine its length. The longest is really long, but it's not Gandalf long. It's worth noting that Geralt's beard growth stops when you apply Witcher 3's free beard and hairstyle DLC, as the guy explains. He says, when you download the free beard and hairstyle DLC, the growth of the beard will stop because we decide that when players want a predefined look, it will look. It would be weird to require from them to reapply it after the time. So Geralt's beard does indeed grow as you play Witcher 3 up to a point, but you can set his length, his look, and have it remain unchanged with DLC. Yes, it's weird. I remember with Fable, we had the tattoos that would the markings that would show, you know, how much damage you would have that you've taken, like how scarred up you'd be. But the beard, yeah, it's a weird thing to change based on how you play. But it's unique. I don't really know many other games that have beards that change length as you know the more you play. But it's quite cool. I mean, most of the stuff you play, you know, think about Grand Theft Auto, stuff like that, it's all based on different hairstyles because of, you know, changing customization. You know, as the basic thing is with RPGs and stuff like this these days, it's all about customization of your character, how you want them to look, that sort of stuff. All right, where is this article? There was an article that I got before the show started from about Google, because it's April Fool's Day tomorrow. And for some reason, people still fucking do April Fool's jokes, even though we live in the world with the internet, and, you know, it just still happens, supposedly. Google has launched one of its annual April Fool's Day jokes a little early. You can now activate a Pac-Man mode for Google Maps. The offering allows you to scroll to the area of your choice and see it automatically turn into a map for Pac-Man to explore. Roads become pathways for Pac-Man and the ghost, then wrapped around edges of the screen. Should be fun to do with Boston, to be honest. Or London. It's all a big fucking mess. It's the most exciting thing that's ever happened to Haywards Heath. Put it that way, told Eurogamer Guides editor John Bedford. Jeez. Yeah, I say it looks interesting and fun. To be honest, I wouldn't mind giving it a go myself. It's a free game of Pac-Man, to be honest. Last year they did the Pokemon thing. I think Google did. Yeah, they did the Pokemon thing where you could catch all the Pokemon trying to find them on the maps, and I think Nintendo gave special rewards away to people who had found them all, basically, and, you know, good rewards actually, from what I've been hearing. Pac-Man on Google Maps, it's quite fun. I mean, it's not about pranking as such. It's more about just having fun with it, which is nice, to be honest. Multi-million, billion-dollar company, and they can have fun with Pac-Man. There was something I was going to read. As I say, I'll read this. As I did, you know, I watched the Atari Game Over documentary. Talk about some Atari stuff. Atari considering rebooting Tempest, Missile Command, and more. Yeah, Atari launched today launches Asteroids Reboot Asteroids Outpost on Steam as an early access title, and it's starting to reboot either cult classic Threatened. That's weird. It's a weird use of word for that thing. It's like, yeah, we're going to fucking do it and you're going to like it, sort of that. This is weird. Atari Outpost is an open-world survival sandbox shooter. You play a deep space prospector and they have to harvest your fortune while defending off claim jumpers. It's developed by indie developer Salty Games. Scroll down. There's a video here which I won't play, obviously. But yeah, Atari has already rebooted. I love this. Alone in the Dark with Alone in the Dark Illumination, which is currently in beta. Which will probably be as shit as most of the other recent Alone in the Dark games that we've got. And Roller Coaster Tycoon World, which is also in development. Atari COO Todd Shellbelter said Asteroids Outpost is an example of the company's new strategy of partnering with young and innovative studios to take a refreshing look at each game from our extensive portfolio. Shellbetter added other reboots or rebirths, as he calls them, are on the way. Asteroids is the first of a long series of rebirths, and we are considering doing the same for other iconic games such as Warlords, Adventure, Tempest, Missile Command, and many more. Because I saw Adventure, because I watched this documentary and they were showing off all the old games that they had. But Adventure was basically, you were a little block on a screen, and it was just sort of you were going around other pathways and stuff. It was Pac-Man, but without all the fun, pretty much. It could be good, you know. The mention of a potential Tempest reboot is sure to catch the attention of that game's community following the recent flurry around developer Jeff Minter's claims that about Atari and its attempt to block a release of TXK on PC, PlayStation 4, and virtual reality devices. Earlier this month, Minter revealed Atari had blocked the release of his Vita shooter TXK on other platforms, claiming it's infringed on its Tempest copyright. According to Minter, Atari also wants TXK removed from the sale on the PlayStation Store. Minter said that he tried and failed to convince Atari to allow him to use official Tempest brandings for TXK ports. TXK are following a follow-up from the cult Atari Jaguar shooter Tempest 2000, which Minter created in 1994 while working for the old Atari. Tempest 2000 itself was a remake of Dave Thero's 1981 arcade game classic Tempest, obviously. TXK, which Minter calls a distantly related sequel to Tempest 2000, launched on PlayStation Vita to a critical acclaim in February of 2014. Atari responded to Minter's allegations with a carefully worded statement that stressed the company's right to defend its intellectual property. Atari values and protects its intellectual property and expects others to respect its copyrights and trademarks. When LlamaSoft launched TXK early in 2014, Atari was surprised and dismayed by the very close similarities between the TXK and the Tempest franchise. Atari was not alone in the... Atari was not alone in noticing the incredible likeness between the titles. Several major gaming outlets also remarked the similarity of the features and overall appearance of TXK to Tempest. And one stated... of TXK, this is essentially Tempest. There is no lawsuit. Atari has been in continuous contact with the developer since the game launched in hopes that the matter could be resolved. Minter said he's had it with Atari and ready to move on from the episode. So the likenesses of partnering with the company on a Tempest reboot also appears slim. Who they would dare to have a go? I don't know. I'll wait and see what happens. But, I mean, if Atari wants to reboot their games, they'll find people. I mean, there's so many free-to-play developers and indie developers and various other people developing games these days. There's no real main focus on on the big stuff. It's more, you know, the little stuff, the pick up and play stuff, really. And that's what we're getting at the moment. There was something else, because I know I talked about Ready Player One, but there was an article involving Steven Spielberg, which I have right here. Steven Spielberg to direct video game themed adventure Ready Player One. It's no secret Steven Spielberg is a fan of video games, and now from an upcoming film he'll be directing an adaptation of Ernest Cline's video game themed cyberpunk thriller Ready Player One. In the 24th, so this is something I should read, actually, because I'm running out of stuff to read. I might have to give this a go. The 2012 novel is set in the year 2044, where a teenager sets out on a scavenger hunt in a virtual world made by a man obsessed by 1980s pop culture. Unfortunately, the grand prize is so coveted that folks in the real world are willing to get it willing to kill to get it all. As reported by Deadline, Ready Player One's latest script was written by Zach Penn, who co-wrote The Avengers, X-Men Last Stand, and the upcoming Pacific Rim 2. And he directed the documentary Atari Game Over, which I watched and talked about at the beginning of the show. Ready Player One's author actually worked with Penn, before on Atari Game Over, the documentary about the excavation of buried video game software and hardware after the industry crash in the early 80s when E.T. became a phenomenally huge disaster. There we go. Eurogamer contributor Dan Whitehead was rather impressed with that film, but Atari Game Over is still one of the best films about gaming this year and should be seen by anyone with an interest in the medium's early history and sort of Wild West years. I love that. It's the best films about gaming this year. I mean, do we get many gaming films come out year after year? I think it's like the second or third film that's been out in like 3 years. Nothing much. But maybe I should give this book a read. I need stuff to read. I'm sort of running out of, I've read The Odyssey and various other bits, but this book could be pretty cool. Where was I? Yeah, here we go. So a bit of a layoffs here from Drive Club. The Drive Club developer Evolution set to lose 55 staff. Evolution Studios, the developer of PlayStation 4 exclusive racing game Drive Club, is set to lose 55 staff. Sources familiar with the matter have told Eurogamer. Two independent sources claim to the close to the studio mentioned at the 55 figure. To Eurogamer after the cults were announced. After the cuts of the cults, the cuts were announced to the staff at Runcorn-based developer. Runcorn. Yeah, I know where that is. Based developer last Friday on 25th March. That's roughly half the studio, sources say, with the redundancies affecting permanent staff. One source indicated that some of the 55 may be retained as contractors. But that's up to in the air at this point. So they've probably been kept on, but less pay, I'm guessing. Last week, Eurogame revealed the restructure at the studio, which Sony was said was part of a move to focus on Drive Club as a service, as well as the launch of the long-delayed PlayStation Plus edition. Evolution is part of Sony's vast worldwide studio setup, which includes Killzone maker Guerrilla Games, Uncharted developer Naughty Dog, and SingStar creator Sony London Studios. Drive Club was originally set to launch alongside PlayStation 4 in November 2013, but was delayed a year to the 10th of October in 2014. The extra year development was costly. Was a costly decision for Sony Computer Entertainment executives. Server issue marred the game's launch and set back the release of the PlayStation Plus edition, but Eurogamer understands it sold well, particularly in Europe. Here's Sony's statement on the matter. They say, Evolution Studios will now focus on Drive Club as a service going forward, in particular the important launch of the PlayStation Plus edition. We will be restructuring Evolution Studios to ensure that the SCEWRS. What the fuck? Are in particular, and in particular, Evolution Studios are in the best position to achieve these goals. Our first party development studios are key to our creative strategy, and we are very excited about the future projects being worked on and the role Evolution Studios will play. And specifically about the redundancies, they say this. We will be looking to relocate team members throughout the studios, but unfortunately some redundancies will be necessary, and in those cases we will assist staff in any way we can. I like that. I like it when they say all these developers say they will assist the staff in finding a job, because pretty much most of them are sort of contract workers anyway, and they get passed around from games industry, from developer to developer, to making different games, which is good. I mean, I am really glad I didn't try and get into this business, because I'm too fucking stupid to do this sort of shit anyway. The redundancy process is now ongoing. Sony has yet to explain its decisions, but sources have speculated. Pure finances were one of the phrase one phrase mentioned to us. Perhaps a smack for Drive Club's problems was another. There is also some concern that the redundancies are another step for Evolution on the road towards closure. But now, for now, the focus is on Drive Club, with more downloadable content and the PlayStation Plus edition waiting in the wings. The staff they kept are the best at what they do. Oncel said, "If you wanted a fresh start for Evo, these are the people to do it with." If you have, it's just usual end of the article stuff. Yeah, it's bad that people are losing their jobs, but it's what happens. I've read many articles like this over the past couple of years of, you know, developers, you know, firing workforce to, you know, cut down on costs, and, you know, once you've done the job, what's the point of keeping you around? They'll just get rid of you. That sort of stuff. Right, let's have a look. What else we got? There was something else I saw. Right. One second. Oh, here we go. This is quite funny. World Bank executive discovers son spent $4,500 on FIFA packs. Basically, World Bank director of corporate communications is the latest parent to discover that their child had raked up a huge credit card bill while purchasing virtual game items. Scroll down, I'm just sort of all over the place. Here we go, yep. Yeah, Jeremy Hillman, who according to his Twitter bio is based in Washington, D.C., recently found his 13-year-old son had spent $4,500 on FIFA purchases without his parents' knowledge. Writing in a Medium.com blog post on the issue, Hillman admitted that it had taken him several months to notice that something was amiss. I initially thought it might be just a glitch in the renewal of my Office 365 subscription. He explained a quick check showed it couldn't have been that. When I heard my son's meekly call out for his mother from his bedroom after hearing me start to rant, there was clearly another explanation. Hillman said he has since confiscated his son's Xbox and a promised table tennis table on hold. Fuck it, I'm just slurring my words. And a promised table tennis table, Jesus Christ, on hold. Who's playing fucking table tennis? What, we're in the south of France. But he has also questioned Microsoft's role in the saga and asked whether the company could have done more to stop the charges occurring. This article goes on, doesn't it? Where was Microsoft in this? Where was their responsibility? I should declare here that I feel conflicted about writing this. I have good friends at Microsoft, especially in the press and communication teams. We went back and forth a couple of times, but no effect. Even though I pointed out my son's age was restricted in the system, was registered in their system, and it was to his name, and they were sending a receipt for each purchase. Hillman admitted that he had entered his own credit card details and into his son's account, but that was just to download the game itself, and he has no knowledge that the money could do that. That more money could what the fuck? no knowledge that more money could then be spent. Which was, it's bad parenting. You should know what this your kids are up to. Otherwise, you know, they could be up to anything. You know, doing anything. You know, whatever. He says, in truth, my wife and I probably should have paid a little more attention. No fucking shit, Hillman admitted. But my new house, new jobs, meant he was left to his own devices more than usual. He tearfully told me that he tried to buy a player pack for $100, but it hadn't worked, and so he tried a couple more times. My wife and I accepted our responsibility in this. We should have paid more attention to his video gaming, and my son accepts his responsibility and punishment. But how many users legitimately spend thousands of dollars on in-app purchases, and just how much usage would it take from Microsoft to flag this as unusual behavior and require confirmation that the purchase is legitimate? Banks and credit card companies should regularly do this. He says, if there was a lawyer out there that would start a class action against Microsoft and force them into compensation and adopting a better policy, I'll sign up. After seeing the blog gain traction online, Hillman updated his post to state, I have not initiated any legal action. And not planning to, and have already paid the credit card bill. My main intention for the blog post was to share my experience with other parents and help them learn from my mistakes. Hillman is not the first parent to discover that their child has been spending time and their money. Numerous UK parents have complained about unexpected charges on their bank statements racked up by their kids via tablets, phones, games, consoles tied to their parents' credit cards. Microsoft offers a suite of potential credit potential controls on the Xbox 360 and Xbox One that restrict access to unauthorized purchases, as well as age appropriate content and other settings. But yeah, that's bad parenting. It really is. I mean, yes, you should, you know, pay more attention to what your kid does, basically. It's very funny. I mean, to be honest, we all heard about the Smurf game where some kid spent a shit ton of money on fucking Smurf berries or whatever the hell they're called. I mean, I don't play it. But you need to pay more attention to your kids, you know, what they get up to. That's the whole point of being a parent. You're just watching over them. You're their guardian, protector. You make sure they do the right things. And I mean, what the fuck's this idiot moaning about as well? He's a World Bank director. This arsehole's got to be on fucking millions. And he's only worrying about 4,500. Are you kidding me? What a smug prick. But yeah, I say it's bad. I mean, it should have been a better parent, but I don't know. These arseholes are the same these days. Just trying to... Oh, here we go, yeah. Star Wars Rebels Pinball is Zen Studios' next table. Star Wars Pinball developer Zen Studios has revealed its next table based on the Star Wars Rebels, which is a good show, and I recommend everyone highly enough to watch it. That's it. There we go. Yeah, it's due on the 27th of April. Zen's table of pinball series, including Pinball FX2, Zen Pinball 2, and Star Wars Pinball. This upcoming table will be based on the Disney XD's animated TV series. As such, it will encompass seven missions. That include the show's roster of characters and vehicles with fully animated TIE fighters and the Starship Ghost. Back in 2013, Zen Studios vowed Eurogamer contributor Rich Stanton with its Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back table. It seems ludicrous to say about a pinball table, but this feels its elements combining into something truly evocative. He wrote in his glowing Star Wars pinball Empire Strikes Back review. Players have been anxious to see if Zen Studios and Lucasfilm would continue creating new Star Wars pinball tables. He says, I'm happy to confirm that our teams have been working together to do just that, said Zen Studios VP of Publishing Mel Kirk. Star Wars Rebels is set during a time period never explored in the films. Between episodes 3 and 4, here lies a 20-year stretch of Star Wars history. It's closer to... it's really, really close to episode 4, to be honest, from what I've been watching. We're delighted to be able to bring out our blend of pinball magic to this new phase of the Star Wars universe. I might have to pick this up as well. I mean, I know that'll probably come on like, iOS or something as well, so... It'd be fun. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I do love the Star Wars Rebels show. It's really fun, and pinball is great because it's pinball. Let's find some more stuff because I'm literally running out of time again. Oh, here we go. As I talk about Drive Club, we've got this. Looks like Motorstorm's buggies are coming to Drive Club. Leak footage from the PlayStation exclusive racer Drive Club has shown off as an unannounced edition of MotorStorm buggies. Oh, let me scroll down. The rugged four-wheel vehicles can be seen bouncing along the track of Drive Club's Canada locale in more than 5 minutes of the footage. There's footage on this one. The gameplay, originally posted by All Games Beta, appears to have been captured from a normal working copy of the game. A listing for Drive Club MotorStorm buggy... What's it say? Womack Typhoon DLC was briefly available to view and download via the Hong Kong PlayStation Store last week before it was taken offline. Presumably, it won't be long until Sony officially unveils this pack to the public. Yeah, it should be coming out soon if it's available up already. Sony released MotorStorm Apocalypse for PlayStation 3 back in 2011 and followed up with a downloadable PC spin-off for Microsoft. Downloadable spin-off MotorStorm RC. There's been no word yet on a new title in the series, but they may be the closest thing fans get for a while. It would be pretty nice if we did have a MotorStorm on the PlayStation 4, because we've had one on the PlayStation 3. Can we have one on the PlayStation 4? I mean, I wasn't too good at MotorStorm when I did play it, but it was a fun game. It really was. Alright, let's have a look. Here we go. Yeah, this is quite interesting. Head teachers threaten to report parents who let their children play 18-rated games. A head teacher group has threatened to report parents who let their children play 18-rated games to the police and social services for neglect. This is a bit... I don't know. Maybe too close to the mark for me. Because, I mean, I was playing like Resident Evil when I was like 13... It was like 15 rated anyway. Nantwich Educational Partnership is a group of 14 primary and 2 secondary schools in Cheshire. Wrote to parents last month after finding some children had been playing the likes of Grand Theft Auto, Gears of War, and Call of Duty. Where was I? Yeah. If your child is allowed to have appropriate access to any of the associated products, then it is designed 18 plus. We advise to contact the police and child care services as this is deemed neglectful. The letter read. The Sunday Times, which is behind a paywall, which reported the story over the weekend, spoke with. Mary Hennessy Jones, Jesus Christ, double barrel name, must be a Poskal. The head teacher who drafted the letter, she said it was a bid to help parents keep their children in as safe as possible in this digital era. It's so easy for children to end up in the wrong place, and parents find it helpful to have very clear guidelines. She added. Margaret Morrissey of the Parents Out Loud agreed that children should not play violent games, but thought that the threat of from head teachers was a step too far. According to the huge concerns about the about these violent games and their effects on children, I think the schools are stepping outside the realm of what's probably acceptable, she said. It will be constructed by many parents as a threat, and it is not helpful. If schools want to support the support of parents and gain their confidence, threatening them with local social services will not help. Elaine Halligan, London director of the parent practice, she said she understood why the teachers had issues with the letter, but instead getting social services involved is an absolute disaster because it starts telling parents that we don't trust you to be responsible for your children. But to be honest, though, if your kids are playing these games and they shouldn't be because they're not age rated, then that's your problem as a parent because they're getting the game somehow, either from other people who've letting their kids play this. But just most of the stuff's not that bad anyway. It's mostly sort of comic violence, comedy. I don't know. The Department of Education states all school staff have a responsibility to identify children who are victims or like to be victims of abuse and should take appropriate action, working with other services as needed. The call from head teachers has highly highlighted the issue of parenting responsibility and the role teachers can and should play. All video games are rated age rated by the by PEGI. And video game consoles already come with parental controls restricting content that can be used on them. There are thousands of games that are suitable for all ages, and there are some games that deal with adult themes in the same way that some films, television programs, books do. CEO of the games industry, trade body, Yuki Dr. Joe Twist told Eurogamer. One second. We have PEGI rating, PEGI age ratings, and parental controls all on consoles to ensure games that are meant for more mature audiences and are not played by children. Parents should use all the guidelines and tools that are available and make sure that they talk to their children about what they are playing and what content is suitable for them and what is not. The rating on ratings and online information. Services will services like AskAboutGames.com are there to help them with these conversations. Yuki Chairman Andrew Payne was more blunt. He says any 18-rated game should not be played by anyone under 18. He said it is really as simple as that. Parents just need to enforce this with their children. Yeah, I mean. The only people who can stop this is the parents. It's like, well, how is your son or daughter getting this game? Okay, where do they get it from? Okay, you have a bit more interest in your kids. I mean, it's one big pain. It's like, yeah, just, be more of a parent. Parent your child. Don't be, I don't know, be a good parent. Don't be a shit parent, basically. This is pretty much going to wrap up the show for this week. Thank you all for listening. But yeah, so don't forget, if you do want to get in touch with the show, you can email us at any time. It's antisocialgameradio@yahoo.co.uk. If you want to Skype in at any time, it's antisocialgameradio@yahoo.co.uk. If you do want to Skype in, it's antisocialgameradio. It's all one word on Skype. If you want to join the Facebook group, it's facebook.com/group/MLRGamerLobby. If you want to like us on Facebook, it's facebook.com/antisocialgamerradio. You can also follow us and the station. It's at @MLRGamerRadio and at More Like Radio. Coming up next, we have Alcohol by Volume with Kevin. And then after that, you have My Time Now with Johnny Five. And then finishing up the night is Dutch and Royce. Don't forget to say, Tuesday is the night to listen to all the good shows on the station. Don't forget everything else tomorrow, 360 and 420, Hippo Juice, a whole bunch of shows. Go to morelikeradio.com and get all the info on the station and all the shows and how to contact each of the hosts. So we are 4 weeks away now from the third annual live event, basically Lakeland, Florida, at the Preservation Hall, 8:30 till midnight. It's going to be It's going to be a great night. All of you should get down there, and it's going to be tons and tons and tons of fun. But yeah, I say this is pretty much it for me this week. I will see you again next week. Have fun and keep playing some computer games.
Ashley brought anything to the table?
Oh my god, yeah, what a sure. bag of burden that British piece of shit was. Holy
a
shit.
A woman can pilot.
From everyone here at BBC Radio 4, this is Alice Arnold, hoping that you sleep well and wishing you a very good night. Good night.
The area forecast for the next 24 hours. Viking north at Sierra, south at Sierra, south or southwest, or northwest, or northeast or east. Occasional rain, wintry showers, occasional rain, rain or showers, occasional rain, moderate or poor.